Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Tet, and we're holding the last couple of words on the bottom of Nun Chet Amud Beit. So, Omar Rav, Ana Avoy B'minyona Devei Rabbi U'minoy Didim Manu Beresh. I want you to know that I happen to have actually been in that Bezda when they took the vote for Rebbe's Takana, where Rebbe said after it was there for 12 months, so then anybody who buys can keep it. He just has to pay the 25% to the original owner. And I was actually there. And not only was I there, the first one to vote was me. Now, this is even though Rav was certainly not the greatest one in that Bezdin. Obviously, it was the Rebbe's Bezdin. And Rashi says, Ani shamati shebekatan shebemai. He was Dafka, the youngest, the least choshev of that Bezdin. And nonetheless, they started from me to take the votes. Asked the Gemara, but why? Why would they do that? Only dinei nefashot matchilin min hatzad. So the story over here is the basis of the pasuk in Mishpatim, the lo ta'ane ariv lintot. So lo ta'ane ariv, the Gemara darshins means lo ta'ane arav, that the Godol Shebet Besdin should not be the one to paskin first, because we're worried that the other people will be influenced by his opinion, and because of that, we'll end up not actually having a chance to be matzil in a case of dinei nefashos. And the entire pasuk at the end is referring to dinei nefashos. That's clear. The question is whether the opening of the pasuk of the Lotana al-Riv is referring only to dinei nefashos. That's what it says in the Mishnah. That moment is Tyra is Tuma is that, we always start from the Derech HaKovet, from the most choshev of the Dayani, who in this case, of course, would have been Rebbe. And dinei nefashos, in order to avoid the problem of Lotana al-Riv, we start min hatzad. So why did the Din of Sikri Kun, why did they start the votes with Rav, of all people? By the way, the word minhatsad means literally minhatsad in terms of the way that a bezdin sits. Remember that the bezdin is kachatzi goren agula, so it sits in a semicircle. And the av bezdin, actually, or the nasi, in this case, if the nasi is there, sits in the middle. The most chashuv is this. We learn up, remember from the Seder HaMishnah of Moshe Rabbeinu, that after he taught the Bnei Aharon, so then they would sit one on either side in order of their chashivas and so on. So, because of that, when we talk about Minatzad, we mean literally from this side and not in the middle, which is where the Rosh Bezdin would be. So how come Rav was the first one to vote? Well, my Rabba Bereda Rav, Avitamer Abhila Bereda Rabbi Wallace, Shaini Minyana Devei Rabbi, Dekula Minyana Minatzad Avamatchilin. By Rebbeinu HaKodesh, every single time that they took a vote in Bezdin, they always had Minatzad. They would never go to Rebbe first. So Rashi says that Rebbe actually holds that Los Anel Riv is a din in any kind of halacha. And Tosfos says he doesn't believe. We never saw that there's a machlokas about this, that he shouldn't hold of the Mishnah. So that it probably was a function of Rebbe's Anova. If the Av Beis Din doesn't want that everybody should always be looking at him as the most choshev, he has a right to be potech min hatzad. And that's what it means over here, to be potech min hatzad, always by Rebbe.
But it's so, also connected, that was the Zecharia ben Avkulis issue, right? His anbesanos. So he spoke first because he didn't view himself as the gadol, and then nobody argued on him, right? Is that the way Rebbe understands that sugya?
No. But, I mean, it's an interesting additional point. But, I mean, the Yikra Nekuda that Rebbe Yochanan is bringing out over there is that by not having the self-confidence to be able to come up with a serious awareness of what's going on, and you're too frightened to think it out and take responsibility, you end up being destructive. But it certainly is a nice addition that we know that he happens to be a person like that. Yeah.
Somebody taught it to me that way. It's not my shot.
Yeah, I know. I understand. I know I just don't believe that that's the point in the Gemara. Anyway, getting back there. So the Omer Rabba Bre the Rava, the Tema Rabbi Hillel Rabbi Wallace, so we have the same exact Seder of the Ma'amorim, so we bring over here, once we're talking about the aspect of the Chashivas of the Rav, so Mimot Moshe V'Yad Rabbi, Lomatzinu Torah U'Gedula B'Makom Echad. From the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the time of Rebbe, we don't find in one individual the greatest Torah in the generation and the greatest Gedula in the generation. Now, this Gedula could mean different things. And we'll see that in some of these cases, it may by Rebbe, actually Rashi says at Sanhedrin that by Rebbe it refers to the Gedula of the Nesias. Over here, Rashi says it means the Gedula of his lifestyle, his riches were incredible. Well, we know as Rashi brings from Rebbe Vantaninos, even in his Pirush in the Chumash, that's the Shnei Goyim B'Vitneich. Fine. And as the Gemara, is that really true, though? What about Yoshua? Yoshua was like a melech. So in terms of the Nesias, he was Chashev. And at that time, he was also, after the death of Moshe, when he became a melech, he became also the Godol B'Teira of the Dor. No, not true. Because there was Elazar, and Elazar, who was Ben Aaron, he was basically also the same level of godless of Yoshua. So you can't say that he was the greatest. Whereas by Moshe Rabbeinu and by Rebbe, you could say it was the greatest. So since there was Elazar, it didn't count. Okay, then there was Elazar. So what happened after Yoshua died? Elazar was the one who was both the most choshev. And he was also, sorry, over there you could be choshev, by the way, the gedula could be in terms of the kahuna also. So we see by Pinchas, we'd be talking about kahuna, the chashivas. In other words, it doesn't have to be in terms of riches, but could be in terms of political authority, of spiritual authority, that means in terms of the kahuna gedula, whatever it is, but it should be something that is absolutely unique, that people recognize that this person is both the gadol hador and also the most powerful in some element. Okay, so what about Elazar? You're telling me Elazar was as great as Yoshua, which means after Yoshua died, so Elazar was both the Gadol Hador and the greatest Nasi. No, because there was Pinchas. Pinchas was just as great as Elazar was in Torah. Okay, but after Elazar died, there was Pinchas. Yeah, but then there were the Zekanim. And the Zekanim were as great as Pinchas. Okay, what about Shaul? Shaul was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he was also the Melech. Yeah, but there was Shmuel. I mean, Shaul is not considered to be as great as Shmuel. Shmuel was the Rebbe. Yeah, but Shmuel died while Shaul was the Melech, right? So then that leaves, during that time, that there was an example of somebody who was both the greatest in Torah and the greatest in Chashiva. So how come we don't say from the time of Shaul? No, we mean that kulo shnika amrinim, we mean that from the time that this person became the greatest, so he was given over the Nesias, or he became the Melech, that during that time he was the entire period the greatest in his generation. Okay, well, what about David HaMelech? You know, he was the Gadol Hador. No, he wasn't, because there was Ira HaYairi, and the Gemara says elsewhere that Ira HaYairi would sit on top of Korim Uchzatot, and David would sit on the floor learning from it. You know, that's not true that he was the greatest. Yes, but Ira HaYairi died while David was still Melech. Okay, but like we said before, Kulosh Nibi, you know, we want to know someone who, during the entire period of the godless, that was as in the case of David, it was Malchus, that he was also the greatest in Torah. Well, what about Shlomo HaMelech? Wasn't he the greatest in Torah also? No. There was Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera was Shlomo's Rebbe. But Shlomo killed him. So then you have the greatest, yes, but as we said, we're talking about Kulashni. Well, what about Chizkio? Yeah, Chizkio, it's true, but there was Shevna. And remember that Shevna had 130,000 people coming to Shir, and Chizkio only had 110,000 people coming to Shir. Okay, but then Shevna was knocked off, remember? And Sancheriv kills him, and that was the whole story, that Chizkio actually was nervous, that maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to paskin like Shevna, because he has a bigger bezdin, and he held that we have to give in to Sancheriv, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that this is Kesher Rishayim, Kesher Rishayim in a minyan. This is, remember, an unbelievable thing, Rabbi Sein, that we're talking about someone who filled Yankee Stadium for every shiur, right? More than that. Yankee Stadium only holds about 90,000 people, less than 100,000 people, that's for sure. And he would have 130,000 people at the shiur. And he's called Kesher Rishoyim. So next time you hear about this massive shiur, and the whole country came to listen to the shiur, don't think it means very much. It's an amazing thing. Absolutely amazing. Because, I mean, nowadays, we judge the chashivas in terms of how big the shiur is. Uh-oh, we've got another Barnea neighborhood issue.
This is a very famous thing that Clement Gernot found in the 1800s on Har Zeisim, a stone that had a hole through it. I am something Yahu Isha Sher Alabayit, which was Shebna's position. There's nothing here except my bones and the bones of my Amma, very interesting phrase. And anybody that opens it should be cursed. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with that, yeah.
So the suggestion is that the Nevuah, which was said to Shebna, was, you think you're Hatzav, Hatzav Tel HaKeder, that this is Shebna Yahu Isha Sher Alabayit, and it was the stone from his keber. You can't prove it, but it's a Gavaldika suggestion. And the stone is now in the British Museum, room 56, up high in the wall. I couldn't find it. I went looking for it. Nachliel found it for me. He said,
wow.
Look up high.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. Yeah, but I've been, it's so strange that nobody takes to heart like what these kind of things mean. It's like frightening. Okay. Anyway, but so why wasn't Chizkiyahu considered to be the equivalent of Moshe Rabbeinu and of Rebbe in that sense during those years? Because, as we said, we're talking about Kulo Shnei Kamrina. Well, what about Ezra? Ezra was amazing. Ezra, we say, was like Mamish, like Moshe Rabbeinu, was roy that the Torah should be given out Yaday, and he was the great authority that everybody listened to Ezra. Yeah, but there was also Nehemiah. And there was Nehemiah ben Chacharia, and Nehemiah ben Chacharia, some learned that the issue of here is not that he was as great as Ezra in terms of Torah, but that he was as great as Ezra in terms of Chashivas, because he was the one basically was dealing with the government. So you can't say that he was the greatest. In other words, we're asking from either side, because we want to find someone who was the greatest, both in Torah and in Gedula. Omre v'akabredu rava. I can add to that, because, I mean, this was only said up until that time, up until the time of Rebbe. You know, now there's been a lot of generations from Rebbe, and I can say that from the days of Rebbe until the days of Rav Ashi, lo matzino Torah v'gedula b'malkam echad. And Rav Ashi is just like that. Wait a minute, there's no one as great as Rav Ashi? What about Huna Bar Nosan? And he was as great as, I mean, we have the same idea. Remember, that was the whole story, that actually Rav Ashi was upset at the Malach HaMavis. The Malach HaMavis came to take Rav Ashi away, and it's in the middle of a marketplace. So Rav Ashi says to him, what kind of nonsense is this? You don't kill someone choshev in the middle of a marketplace. Anyway, I need 30 days to chazer over all of my learning, because of Ashri Misha Balakan V'tamuda B'yadai. It's an amazing story. Okay, so Malach HaMavis gives him 30 days, right? So now it's the 30th day. Malach HaMavis shows up again. He says, okay, now it's time. So Rav Ashi says, what the heck is the big rush over here? My gosh. So the Malach HaMavis tells him, because as long as you are the Gadol, we can't make Huna Bar Nosan the next Rosh, and it's already his time. And Ein Malchus Nogat B'Chaverta K'moli Nima. So you see the tremendous chashivas of Huna Bar Nosan. So how can you say that Rav Ashi was the same as Rebbe? Amazing stories. Anyway, Shiny Huna Bar Nosan, the Mikaf Avikai of Leila Rav Ashi. It's true, but in the sense of the Chashivas, Huna Bar Nosan completely was Mavatal himself to Rav Ashi, and because of that, always we view Rav Ashi as, in terms of the power of the Torah and the power of the Chashivas that was his, it's all his. And that's why we say that Eino Chinami. From the time of Rebbe until now, until Rav Ashi, we find also the same idea. Who's trying to talk here?
Was he on Rav Ashi's basis?
Why don't we raise a hand here so I can know that somebody wants to talk? Yeah, okay, now I hear you. Yeah, but yes, and he was yes.
They were the ones that actually put these words down,
right? Well, yeah, it could be. What's the difference?
No, I'm just saying.
Okay, we're ready. I see somebody's been playing with my Zoom. We've got Richie all on his own today. Unless he's supposed to be scared of Alon Rogoff. And I'd be scared of Alon Rogoff, but I don't understand what happened to my Zoom.
Maybe it's become now.
I'd be even more careful if he's under you. I mean, you never know what he's going to jab. So I would go right ahead and give us a brilliant... big. Lovely. Okay, we're going back to the main issue that we've been talking about, and that is all of the things that were made in this in last previous parak. We talked about the normal, the regular dinim of Tikkun Olam. Here we've been talking about issues that have to do with finances of Tikkun Olam, and we'll go back to continue that. So now the question is, what is the halacha about the dinim of a cheresh? Now he's going to have a big problem about selling, if he needs to buy and he needs to sell, what actually would make his kinyan a kinyan? Midiraisa, there's a big problem, because midiraisa, he cannot actually be involved in something because he doesn't have das. But the Rabbanan needed to be metakein for him, that otherwise the guy, I mean, who's going to take care of him? He's not going to be able to buy food. He's not going to be able to sell. He's not going to be able to do anything. So the Rabbanan were metakein that he can actually make kinyanim. How does he do so? He utilizes either signing or he moves his lips. So we'll see whether moving one's lips is sufficient to be able to be gomer. So a cheresh, according to the Tanakhama, can be romez v'nirmaz. So you can sign to him. Obviously, it doesn't mean literal, you know, American Sign Language or anything, but whatever it is that is clear from what he's moving his hands, and that's his indication of what he wants. And also, he can respond. If somebody does that to him and he responds with a remez, that is considered min rabbanan to be the equivalent of das, and it's a good kinyan. Ben Betera Omer, he doesn't need to sign. He could even be kofetz v'nikpatz. He could move his lips, and indeed you can assume that you're reading his lips properly, and that is true, but all of this is true b'nogea mitaltalim. We're not talking about selling karka. We're talking about selling mitaltalim, so that there would be enough for him to be able to lead his life normally. Hapa'utot, little kids, also have such a takana, because if they wouldn't, then how would anybody ever buy lemonade at a lemonade stand? If kids can't open a lemonade stand, we're in big trouble. And anyway, you never grow into a company like Amazon if you don't start with a lemonade stand. So therefore, the Rabbanan had to be mitakein that there should be business dealings with children. And because of that, mikcha mekach, mimkar on mimkar. And again, this is only true b'metaltalin. And this way, they're able to take care of themselves. Not every child has a court-appointed, apotropos or a parent-appointed apotropos. Unfortunately, many children are on their own. So in order to make it possible to survive, the Chachamim were metakein in this as well. This, again, is essentially financial. So I'm Rav Nachman. This whole idea is a fascinating interrelationship between our financial tikkun olam and the dinim of gittin itself. And here we get straight to that issue. I'm Rav Nachman. The whole machlokas over here is, but again, metaltalin. But when it comes to gittin, even ben b'seira is made there, that you need to do it b'remiz. We don't rely on his moving his lips. Read my lips. You are divorced. You no good. And so on and so forth. That doesn't count. It may count for electing a president, but it certainly doesn't count for gittin. So now the question is, obviously, how could he possibly be mevatel a marriage of a d'oraisa? He can't. We're talking about that he was a cheresh at the time of the marriage as well. which means that the same way that the Rabbanan were metaken for him, that he's machnis a wife with remiza, they also were metaken that he's motzi a wife with remiza. The nisuin is the Rabbanan, and the gittin is a gittin, the Rabbanan of a nisuin Rabban. Says the Gemara, I don't understand what Reb Nachman is telling me. I just read that in the Mishnah. It says b'metaltalin. Not what it said. Ben Becerra says b'metaltalin. So that means he was not talking about gittin. No? No. Ma the tema Reb Nachman, if it wouldn't be for Reb Nachman, I would have thought that he's saying you can do this even for metaltalin. And actually, it would mean that in this way that we're understanding it, he's concerned that the gittin is actually more obvious. Why? Because the metaltalin, we're talking about a deoraisa, essentially, to change ownership. So there, you're taking something from one person and giving it to another person. That's a question of a deoraisa. So maybe over there, we need to have the rabbana made a takana that it needs to be more obvious, and you would need remiza, kamash malan. So now we're saying that maybe it's the other way around. Maybe a metaltalin takana, we would have had a havamin is more chomer, kamash malon, that even metatalin, that's what I might have thought. Therefore, comes along Reb Nachman and says, do not make that mistake. And when it comes to gittin, the rabbanon are more machron gittin because of its similarity to the chumra of eshes ish. Okay, this was the first approach that we have to the whole back and forth about Reb Nachman. Now, ikadi amri, others say that actually what Reb Nachman said was not the way we reported it before, but rather, just like we have a machlokas b'metaltalin, that the Tanakhama holds that we're not semech on the way that you move your lips and you have to actually sign, kach machlokas begitin. I asked the Gemara, doesn't it say, in this version, doesn't it say metaltalin, which is mashma only metaltalin, not to gittin? No, ema af b'metaltalin. That actually, we're saying, according to this as well, the Chiddush of Ben Becerra is even to the Deoraisa and Kol Shekein to the Gittin, which is only Drabbanan. Next thing that we had in the Mishnah was about children. Hapa'utot, Mikran Mekach, Mimkoran Mimkar. If we're talking about a lemonade stand, so they're selling metaltalin. But it doesn't say over here how old the Takona is, for what age child are we talking about? So, Machvi Rav Yehuda Rav Yitzchak Barei, so Rav Yehuda made with his fingers 6 or 7. Some learn 6 or 7 is referring to female or male because of the more rapid maturation of a female. So, a female at 6 and a male at 7. Others learn that it's just referring to the way that the particular child has matured, but that's problematic, as we're going to see in another minute, in the Machlokasin. Rav Kahana Amar, 7 or 8. In a Braita, it says 9 or 10. And the truth is, there's no real Machlokas here. Each one of them is talking about the different types of maturation rates. That's all. So therefore, it doesn't make sense to say that the 9 or 10 means that depending on maturation. Because it could be also 6. That's why it must be that it's the difference between female and male. Why did they make such a takon, huh? The time am I? Om Reb Abba Bar Yaakov, Om Reb Yochanan, Mishum Kedei Chayav. If you're not going to have any kind of kinyan that allows people to be sure that what they bought, or what they sold, somebody's not going to come back 2 minutes later and say, you had no right to buy, you're stealing candy from babies over here, and so on. They had to make it possible that people would feel that this is legal, and therefore they gave them the legal rights to actually buy and sell. Okay, we just spoke about Reb Abba Bar Yaakov in B'Shem Reb Yochanan. There's another famous mimer that is very famous in the story of Ben Yehuda the development of Ivrit. So that is the word meltacha. You all know the modern word meltacha is like, everybody's so proud about that word, because when you walk into a hotel, right away they have the meltacha. The meltacha is your coat room, basically, where you get a little stub for putting your coat in. So the place where this is said, this is a fascinating story, where we had the whole incredible maisa of Yehu, where he was trying to get rid of all the Nevi'ei Habal, right? So he calls, supposedly he says, man, you ain't never seen anybody worship Habal like me. So he calls together all of the Nevi'ei Habal, and they all, 80,000 people, it's amazing, they all come, and he's got these 80,000 people there, you know, ready to shech them all. And he says to the guy in charge of the Meltacha, we never heard that word before. It's the only place that it occurs. And he says to the one, he says, take out the Levush, the Kol of the Habal. So apparently a Meltacha is someone who's in charge of Begodim. But what does the word mean? My Meltacha. Like, it's such a strange word. Where would it come from? So there, Omer Baba by Yaakov, Omer the Yochanan, because they used to use these linen clothing as the priest's garb for the Nevi'ei Habal. So the Meltacha means davar hanimlal v'nimtach. So it's basically an interesting combination of words, something that you need to make the threads of by stretching them and pulling them simultaneously and twisting them simultaneously, and that's the way that you create linen threads. So it's an interesting play on the chashivas of the big day, the Nevi'ei Habal. Anyway, so he said, you know, make sure that all the Nevi'ei Habal get their begadim. Then he puts out the word, all right, we can't have any of these ridiculous old-fashioned Jews who believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Make sure they don't have any spies over here of anybody that believes in that. Throw them out of the room. So he makes sure that nobody who is really not an Oved Habal should get killed. And then he kills all of them. That was the end of the Avodas Habal. That's where it says that he turned the whole place into a massive bathroom and that the Baal became the bathroom. Ki asa, Rav Dimi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Dimi said, this, he brought this way because he had arrived in Bavel, that back in Eretz Yisrael, you know, what Rabbi Yochanan said was that Bunyam ben Nunyam, his name, this very rich guy, made a gift to Rebbe. And he made these beautiful begadim that were big enough to fit Rebbe. And they were made out of sivni and chomes and salsala and malmala. Now the sivni and chomes were so fine. These were all incredible linen begadim that were so fine that even though they were big enough to fit Rebbe, this is what they use now for space travel and for camping. If you folded them, they would fold to the size of a nut. So the entire beged was actually so incredible tiny, and yet when you opened it up, it was able to be a complete beged for a Rebbe. It's amazing. And the other one, the was kamguz of a palga, nut and a half, and the other stuff, the salsala and the malmala, those were the size of a pistachio. And a half. That's if we learned that fistica means, I don't know, Rashi says over here that fistica is food for chazirim. So I don't, that's obviously not referring to the, what we normally call fistica, apparently. Anyway, what do they call it?
A balut. Help me. The acorn, the long, drawn out knot from the, is it from, not from the pine cone. From a tree that you see all the way around, that the chazarim,
the oak acorn, those big green oak acorns.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, what's the word malmela? By the way, also very similar to what Rabbi Yochanan said, is why we're bringing this here. Davar hanimlal v'nimtach. So this is again, it's the type of sheish, big linen, that you twist it in your fingers at the same time that it's being stretched out. Anyway, getting back to the din that a child is able to do buying and selling, what about the other din? The din about where there's a mistake, there's an overcharge or an undercharge. So we know that there's these complex dinim that we have in Bav Metzia, that the mekach is entirely batal in the case that you go over 1/6 of an over undercharge, and that if it's a 6, then you will give back the difference. What's the din about a child? So that is the next question. The ta'utan, if there's a mistake in the price, ad kama, omri b'yon omri b'zir, it's the same thing. There's no change. They were made essentially adults by the stakon and the rabbana. So Achtut is the same as the Godel. Boy, I buy it. When we talk about they have a right to buy and sell, does that mean that they were given a right to kinyanim, or does it mean literally only buying and selling? Because, I mean, suppose they want to give a gift. So, I mean, there's two ways of looking at this. A gifting, and we've seen this throughout, we have a lot of as even here in Gittin, we've had a lot of discussion whether a gift is considered to be actually buying and selling, because people don't just give gifts, they give gifts as part of the kind of interrelationship where they are expecting a quid pro quo of some kind, or this is the actually quid pro quo. So do we take the matana as being also part of the same takana? Or is that takana literally, as we said, k'dei chayav, they have to be able to have buy food? So matana tomai. So Rabbi Yemar says, no, it was never given to them as matana, nein matana to matana. Mar Baravashi says, matana to is a matana. So now they wanted to see what it was that Rav Mordechai, who was like the top Talmud of Rav Ashi, what he held. And this was Mar Bar Rav Ashi had said matana to matana. Now, usually, when we have a case like the here, Rashi says otherwise. Usually Rashi says, I don't know why over here it's different, but usually Rashi is mefarish, that of chuhu means they went out of their way to flip the shitas to fool Rav Mordechai, because they didn't want him coming to the rescue. You know, well, of course, I mean, it's Rav Ashi's son, the halacha must be like, yeah, they didn't want that. So they said it in the other direction. So they said the shita of Mar Bar Rav Ashi is ein matano matana. And it was Rav Yemar who said matana to matana. Rashi says they made a mistake and they flipped the shitas by accident. But whatever it is, they sent the shaila to Rav Mordechai to ask Rav Mordechai, what's the din? And Amar Lahu, so Rav Mordechai sent back a message. I can't believe it. Mar Bar Rav Ashi doesn't remember his father's psak? I mean, Zilu Amar Le Levar Mar, go tell Rebbe's son, don't you remember Lav Ochi Avi Uvda, your father, Rav Ashi? He was standing in front of the Beis HaMedrash. He had one foot on the stairs to go up the Beis HaMedrash. The other foot was still on the ground. And somebody, all of us were there, and we asked him, what's the din of the matana of a child? And right there, without moving, he said to us, it's 100% matana to matana, and it doesn't matter. Don't think I'm talking about a dying child, that it's because of Shchivmira. Even if it's a matanas bori, achas matanas shchimira, achas matanas bori, and it doesn't matter whether it's a big matana, a small matana, it's 100% a valid gift. How did you not remember? Of course, he did remember, but that's what they wanted. They wanted to see whether this was going to be an honest psak. Okay, so now we've got our Richie. I see, I'm telling you, there's a further riot that it's sentient. Listen to what I said, and now it wants to prove that it isn't sentient. See, obviously. Okay, Sir Richard, you're on. There is an interesting extension to the concept of dark of the Tikkun HaOlam, which is called Darkei Shalom. Now, obviously, Darkei Shalom itself is a kind of way of fixing society. But over here, the point is not that there should be a smoother functioning of business or any of the other inyanim that we were talking about. And they are true takonais in the way that the social contract should work. Here, we're talking about avoiding any type of angry interactions. So as we know, kohanim are dangerous, right? They're always starting up with people. They will wave their bottles at them to try to make sure that they drink water. I mean, it's like, it's unbelievable. Or they'll interrupt everything to talk about their neighborhood. But they're dangerous people. So because of that, all we need is to have a situation in shul where other people can read if they are, you know, Talmid HaChachamim, or maybe even if not, and someone will be called up to the first aliyah. And the Kohen will get up and start screaming, what? What? This guy gets the first aliyah before a Kohen? And so on and so forth. So what we did is we made a standard takana. Remember, this is a pusik. I'm not just being cynical. This is Amir Kimrive Kohen, that Kohanim love to fight. So it's one of the takanas that we make Mipnei Darkei Shalom. So you can see how this relates to the overall idea of the Takon of society, is that a Kohen always reads first in Shul, and after him comes the Levi, and only then comes the Yisrael, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. Because this way they know it's nothing to do, this is not personal, this has to do with the list of the Gabbai's hand, don't worry about it. Another takana that was made is that the Erev was usually put in a particular home. So when you make an Erev for a Chatzar, so you have to put it in one of the homes of the Chatzar. If they chose that home, and now somebody else wants it to be in his home, we don't change it. We always put it in the same house, because that way we'll avoid any kind of future arguments. Another one, which is water rights arguments, those are usually very bitter. So remember that normally if you have a bagi, if you have a valley where people are all drawing water from an amat hamayim. So the amat hamayim is an artificial irrigation ditch that draws from a local lake or a stream of some kind. Now, oftentimes, the amat hamayim is going to go dry because the lake, if it's very a hot spell or something, the lake may go down level. So all of the fields would also have a private reservoir, usually a cistern of some kind, so that if there's a week without water, so that they have a backup and they don't lose their fields. Now the question is, in order to fill a cistern or your own reservoir, you have to actually dam up the amat hamayim. So who has the right to do that? So the takana was, the closer you are to the beginning of the ama, you get the right first. Bor shu karov la'ama, he has the right to fill his personal ditch first. And that's because mipnei darkei shalom. This goes down the line. So in other words, it's in order of how close you are to the source of the water. Another takana from mipnei darkei shalom. Mitzudot chayava ofot v'dagim yesh behem mishum gezel. So this was a terrible situation where Richie would set these traps for all of these fish, and what do you know? You've got these ganovim coming over from where they come over, Rich? You know, from the other side of the Baltic. Yeah, not Russia. What's the name of where did we go? Tallinn. Yeah, to Estonia, right. So they would come over and steal Richie's fish with the taina of, I mean, listen, he didn't get the fish yet, so there was no really kinyan, and therefore we have a right to take the fish. So this led to all types of very dangerous situation. Richie's had to buy himself a much more powerful boat with guns and so on. And so the truth is that if a trap is closed, it'll close over, then it's a kinyan. So it is a kinyan because it's kalim that are kona. The only type of things that are not kona from the ikra din and need this is where we're talking about, let's say for birds, you've got a trap that uses a sticky substance, right, that the bird gets caught on. Or for fish, you have gill traps where the fish can't pull out, but there's no box that encloses. That's what we're talking about over here, as we're going to see later on in the Gemara. So mitzidos chaya ofas v'dogim, only midrabbanan, we gave them a din of gezel, mipnei darkei shalom. But Rabbi Yossi says, no, this is real gezel. Now, we're going to find out that Rabbi Yossi does not really believe that it's real gezel. He agrees that it's only derabbanan, except that he holds that the takona derabbanan was to treat it like real gezel, and that therefore it's recoverable in court. Mashenkin, the Tanakama held that it was lechatchilo, you're not allowed to take it from people, but they can't recover it in court. That's the machlokas. But everybody's moda that we're talking about a gezel derabbanan. How about a mitzia of a cheres sheit v'katan? So you have someone who technically does not have das. Now you want to steal the lollipop that the kid found because you like stealing lollipops from kids and it should be mutter. Ah, but you see, they made a takana. The mitzia of a cheres sheit v'katan is considered to be gezel, mipnei darkei shalom, and here too, Rabbi Yossi says gezel gomor. Here too, it means recoverable in court. Oni, Aminakev Barosh HaZayit. Suppose you have an ani on top of your tree who is taking the peah that was left on the top of your tree, or maybe there was leket. So, and he goes up there and he's cutting these things and some of them fall before he's able to take it and put it into his bag. Obviously, if he takes it and put it into his bag, he was already kaneh it. But oftentimes it will fall down to the ground. So now you've got these, you know, opportunistic other aniyim who come and grab it from him. No. Masha tachtav gezel, anything that falls, olives that fall to the ground, they're his. But again, it's only mipnei darkei sholem. And here too, Reb Yossi says it's gezel gomor, again meaning recoverable in court. Ein mimachin b'yad aniyei ovdei kochavim, b'leket shekaveh peah. Let's say that non-Jews show up and they start collecting the leket shekaveh peah together with the aniyei Yisrael. Now, obviously, the leket shekaveh peah was only left al da'at of it being for aniyei Yisrael. But they made a takana. Do not say anything like that to the Avdei Kochavim, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. We need to have a continuous Darkei Shalom between Jews and non-Jews. Okay, where do we get the idea that the Torah, you should set Kohen, Levi, Yisrael? Omer of Masna, actually it's a pasuk, an amazing pasuk. Vayichtov Moshe at Torah hazot, vayitna el ha-Kohanim b'nei Levi. Now, come on, Kohanim b'nei Levi, at the end of the Torah, we need to be told that Kohanim are B'nai Levi. You got to be kidding. So what it must mean, Otto Ana lo yadana de Kohanim B'nai Levi, Nino. But the point is that he gave it for Kriya, that first the Kohen should read, and then the B'nai Levi should read. Rabbi Yitzhak Nafcha says it's not only for Kriya Satera. There's a general pasuk. And we're talking about bringing the Egla Rufa, V'nikshu ha-Kohanim B'nai Levi. How do you explain that? So it tells us that in general, there's a mitzvah that first comes a Kohen and then comes a Levi. Rav Ashi says, Meholcha, B'nei Amram, Aaron Moshe, Vayibadel Aaron Lahagdisho Kodesh Kodashim. This is the classic story of the Kedusha of Kodesh Kodashim of the Kuhuna. Levi is Kodesh and Kohen is Kodesh Kodashim. So you see that there's two different dargas. Since there's a special kedusha for a Kohen, therefore, he should be the one to read first. Reb Chiya Bar Abba says, it's mamash a mitzvah d'oraisa, v'kidashto. That means l'chol davar shebekedusha. Anywhere that the Kohen's madrega is noticeable in a getter of kedusha, which of course Kriyas HaTorah is an element of kedusha, he has to come first. So this is mamish in all inyanim, and there's a brisa, Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, v'kidashto l'chol davar shebekedusha. So that means he's the one that is poteach rishon. If we're bringing together for a shir, he's the one that should speak first. And if we're talking about levorech rishon, he should be the one who makes a bracha to make the hamotzi, or whatever it is, if there's a seuda, or for birkat hamazon, both things we're talking about. V'litol mana yafa rishon, and he's the one that takes, if we're dividing things, question of here what we're talking about, whether in general we're talking about dividing, or we're talking about dividing in yonim that have to do specifically with an element of kedusha. That's a machlokas, actually. Tosfos says over here that there's no din of taking rishon in anything that's to do with business. In other words, we'll say you should be mechabed, your business partner who's a kohen, and that he should take part. By the way, I want to use this opportunity to apologize to Reb Barnea, who was sitting back on the couch in the middle of the last shir that we had on the Shivas B'Tamuz. I wasn't mechabed him with Birchas Hamazon, but I had mistaken his sitting on the couch. I had mistaken for his not participating in the Suda fully, that he was sort of noshing. It turns out he was just sitting on the couch out of anivas, apparently. And he should have been given Birkas HaMazon, so now is the time to ask his mechila, that we have a chance. I was waiting that we should read it together. I've been feeling bad, but because Ramesh Elio said Brishus HaKohen, and then I hopped, oh my gosh, you know, apparently the Kohen should have read. So I was embarrassed. So I was saying, okay, I have a good opportunity to publicly apologize.
I'm but I will take the opportunity.
No, it's a question of mechila. It's the shaila. It's not so posh. So what do you?
My bar mitzvah drasha was on what kind of bar mitzvah? Not my I'm preparing a 2-day tour on olives and olive oil, so I'm holding in the sugya. But keep in mind, the nikuv is hitting, and so by definition, it's all falling down. He's not collecting it. It hit and it falls down, so he can't hold anything on top. He's only hitting. He's helpless. That's the.
Okay. Now, not everybody agrees to that, but it's good. Not everybody.
And in Tunisia, they have a blind person distribute the water to the different irrigation channels. He's kaveya when it's this one time finished, and the next one does, which. You know, he's hearing. It's fascinating.
Interesting. Yeah, this is a very serious issue, as you can imagine, especially when water is tight. Yeah, it's a similar need that we use the word nikuv because of that, but that obviously the halacha over here is the same, even if he had used his fingers and dropped it. That's the question, whether the halacha, that would be considered to be a kinyan of hagabah, or he just loosened it. That's why it's nogel halacha, otherwise I wouldn't make an issue over it. Dvorah, please mute. Okay, so anyway, the question is, if that's the case, then can the Kohen actually be Mocha, as Rabbanah just mentioned? So this is the issue which is raised by our Mishnah, because the Mishnah says that it's because of Darkei Shalom. And we just brought Pasuk after Pasuk to say it's a D'oraisa. So I explained that. From an Abaya. Rav Yosef, how could the Mishnah say it's Mipnei Darkei Shalom? You just proved it's a D'oraisa. Yeah, it means that that's what the Torah had in mind with this D'oraita. That it's an insight into, like Rabbi Shimon says, you know, we have to understand what the Torah, why would the Torah say it's Mipnei Darkei Shalom? That the Torah is makbid on Darkei Shalom. Ah, come on, says Abaye. I couldn't mean that. The whole Torah is Darkei Shalom. Kol HaTorah Kula Nami. You can tell me Darkei Shalom. It's Drachei Darkei Noam V'chol Nativoteh Shalom. So wait, now you're arguing that there's only a few things that are Mipnei Darkei Shalom? So now you that's no good. No. Ela Amar Abaye, I'll tell you. It's actually a special case that the Mishnah is talking about. It's talking about the case of Rabbah, my Rebbe, the Tanya. Shnayim mamtinim zelezeh b'ka'ara. Shlosha ein mamtinim. So he said a number of different halachas of their cheretz at a seuda. So if there's only two people that are sitting down to eat, so then it isn't nice for somebody to take from the serving platter before the other guy comes. You're sitting and wait. But if there's three people and one guy leaves the table or he's late, they don't have to. And the two people that are there, they don't have to wait for the third person. B. Another thing. Habotseya hu poshet yado techila. So if there's people that one person said hamotzi for, and he cuts the bread, he gets the right to take from the chumis platter first, to dip his bread in. Okay. If he wants to give kofet to his rebbe, or lemisha gadol mimenu, harishus b'yodo, he has a right to, if he wants to, he can give somebody else the rishus. The omar mar Allah. So my Rebbe said, when is this? This is only he has a right to give kavod to his Rebbe, or lemisha gadol mimenu, only at a seuda. That he can do. But in the Beit HaKnesset, and he wants to give someone the right to read before him, he's not allowed to, because the ati lin suye. So a Kohen cannot say, let the Levi read before me, or let the Yisroel kamat chacham read before me. Because that already, oh my gosh, somebody else, what, him? He's the one to read instead? I'm not the best one in the shul over here? Get out of here. As everybody knows, my gosh, if it's time to say Kaddish, leave the shul. Okay. So therefore, in order to avoid fights in shul, we don't allow the Kohen. It's got to be Kohen first, Levi second, Yisrael third. We don't give a hang if he wants to give Kohen. So this halacha, that's Mipnei Darkei Shalom, that's the addition of the Mishnah. Mashen Kein, before the Takon of Darkei Shalom, the Kohen would have a right to be Mechabit someone else. Omer of Nasna, Hadi Amrit Bebet HaKnesset Lo, when you're talking about you can't do this in Shul, that's talking about Shabbos and Yontif, where there's a lot of people in Shul. But when you're talking about Monday and Thursday, where nobody shows up, over there, there's not so many people that they're going to get into fights. Tosis points out that this is only at the time of the Gemara, when people, in fact, did not used to come to shul during the week because of the incredible poverty, and going to shul would have been made a tremendous dent in their ability to make a living. But Bisman says none of this is true. I mean, we have the same kind of big minion we have on a Monday and Thursday like we have on Shabbos, so it's not true. But wait a minute, is that actually the din? That if you have a lot of people in shul on Shabbos and Yom Tov, the Kohen can't give? What about Ravuna? Ravuna was not a Kohen, and he would read the first, even on Shabbos and Yom Tov. I explained that. That's different. Shani Ravuna, the Filu Rabbani for Ravasi, who were Mamish, the Kohen Hashive, Sheberet Yisrael, they were Mikav Chavikayef in anything. They made themselves Mamish like bottle to Ravuna. So that, if there's no Kohen in the world that would say, I should read first, we're not worried about it. Om Rabbaya, we have a Kabbalah, Naktinan, that in the event there's no Kohen, the whole thing falls apart. Nitparda achavila. Then the whole takana falls apart. Now, this is a major issue that people misunderstand. You go into shuls, and they'll ask, is there a Levi? Is there a Levi? We don't have a Kohen. That is usur. There's no din of giving a Levi. You're not allowed to give the Levi. The point over here is a big machlokas. To what extent is nitparda achavila? So the Svarim Paskin, Nitparda Chavila means, as the Tosfos talks about over here, even though Rashi brings, that the Levi can't read at all. We don't call up the Levi. The Ashkenazim Paskin, that it doesn't mean that the Levi can't read. It just means you can't be Mechabe the Levi as a Levi. Because the entire point over here is that the Kedusha of the Levi is only because of the way that Levi is Meshamesh the Kohuna. But the moment that we're not Mechabe the Kohen, why are you being Mechabe the Levi? It's not that Levi qua Levi has covered. Levi as the ones that were given over by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Kohanim, that's what gives them their covered. That's something that people, I've seen even a halachas for him that miss out on that whole point. And mamish make mistakes in the call up. And, nobody holds that you call a Levi instead of a Kohen. That's for sure. So when they start looking around for a Levi, tell them there's no such thing. Yes, Levi? Bobby, yes.
Excuse me? I had the sort of being Gabbai for Rav Nachman Kahane because of the Cheskel for several years. And we never had that issue. Rav Nachman is a Kohen. And I actually got exposure to this halacha in the army. Because we didn't have a Kohen there, but we did have a Levi. And he said, no, you don't call me. So this was the whole conversation we had. Excellent. In the army of all this.
Excellent. And the army is the best place for all of these things. It's the only place where people are lemaisa. Everybody else is theoretical. When you're ready to kill for something, then you take it seriously. No, mamish. I mean, they have the most wonderful kind of issues that come up in the halacha and army specifically. Okay, so anyway, now the question is, what happens if you don't have a Levi? So Omer Abaye, we have this Kabbalah also, that if there's no Levi, then the Kohen takes the place of the Levi. What? Is that true? The Omer of Yochanan, we should never have one Kohen reading after another Kohen, because people will say, why is he reading? Oh, man, must have been something wrong with that first Kohen. He probably wasn't a real Kohen, and now they need to call up Kohen to make up for this guy. So we don't do that, Mishum Kamosha Rishon. And a Levi should never read after another Levi, because both of them could end up suffering because of that. Because if people see two Levim reading one after the other, so they'll either think the first guy wasn't a Levi, or they'll think the second guy must be really Yisrael, because why is he reading after the Levi? So therefore, you could kill either of them. Now, why don't we say the same thing about the Kohen? That we'll see in a minute. Anyway, but obviously what Abaye meant is that the same Kohen reads, who read as Kohen, we call him up again to read in the place of Levi, but Einar Chinami, you cannot call another Kohen. Why is it that when it came to a Levi Acher Levi, we said both of them could be in trouble? Because either of them may be not a Levi. Wouldn't the same thing be true about a Kohen Acher Kohen? It's the same thing, right? The person will say, oh, wow, a Kohen just read, and he's reading as the Levi, so he's obviously not a Kohen, right? So why in the world did Rabbi Yochanan say only the first one might be a problem? Well, Rabbi Yochanan is talking about a case where he's saying in a case where we know for a fact that the second Kohen that's called up, he's from a family called Kahana that have been in the shul for generations. Everybody knows he's a Kohen. Nobody's going to think he's not a Kohen. So therefore, the thing that they will think about is the first Kohen. Wait a minute. Apparently, they found out he's not really a Kohen. Understand. So why can't you say the same thing about a Levi? If it's talking about the same case, then Muchzik Lambavodai Sheni the Levi. If you know that the second guy's a Levi, so why would you think he's not a Levi? So maybe the point is like this. Maybe the thing is that people might think that he's actually Pasol. His father married a Mamzeres or a Nesina, and he Pasoled his children. So even though the father is a Levi, but his son is not a Levi. But wouldn't that be true about the Kohen too? That maybe his father was a Kohen, but he married a Grusha or Chalutza, and he was a Mechal all his children, and therefore the second Kohen might be a Yisrael, even though his father is a Kohen. Says the Gemara, yeah, but so if the second Kohen's father would have been married to a Grusha or Chalutza, he wouldn't be reading as a Levi either. The din of a Kohen, the Chulal, is not that he's a Levi, he's a Yisrael. So Levi Mikahave? So therefore, if he would be reading, nobody would think that he's reading as a Kohen who is reduced to a Levi. There ain't no such thing as a Kohen who's reduced to a Levi. There's only a Kohen who's reduced to Yisrael. That's why Rabbi Yochanan says that if you know that the father was a Kohen, so then the only chashash that we have is the pagam of the first one. And by the way, like, who is going to think these crazy things anyway? I mean, somebody who's sitting there for Kriya Satira, he sees that there were seven people that were called up, and they included this guy as one of the call-ups. If he was possible, he wasn't really, we needed to call someone else instead, then we would have had to have seven people besides the guy who was possible, so he'll know that the Kohen wasn't possible. So Ila Yoshvim, people are staying in shul, they'll see that in the end, we didn't call up anybody extra. It's all these guys that they walk out in the middle of the Kriya Satira to get the schnapps. They never know how many people are actually going to be leaning. So for them, we have to worry that they'll also, once you're drinking schnapps, it's a great time to speak Lashon Hara and so on. So they'll start talking about the pagam of the Kohen. Oh, they had to call another Kohen. This guy, who knows what happened with him and so on and so forth. Okay, gentlemen. We'll save the other, Rabbi Feldman's piece about the shul that he puts in the magazine every other week.
Tales out of shul.
Tales out of shul. So we'll save the tales out of shul, Bezrat Hashem, for meeting Mitzvah Shabbos, for Zeicher Amin, and that will be, as we're about to be told by the man of the hour, the EGT, who has finally decided to be Merachim and to make us have a little bit earlier. Yes?
No. 8:28.
Oh, no. This is the most you can do?
Just a little bit. Maybe a little.
Okay. So it looks like we'll have to meet again at 9:30. Looking forward, Bezrat Hashem, to the schus of seeing all of you incredible people. So mechazik me. Halavai. And the only one that we're going to have to miss out on is Sir Richard. He absolutely refuses to set up his Zoom to go on during Shabbos and so on. The tzitkis of this man is beyond belief. They don't call him the Talisker Rebbe for nothing, let me tell you.
I'm waiting for the stars to help me along by coming out before at all.
Yeah, I know. But
pick them again.
What time is Chatzos? We can always go according to Chatzos.
I think the last week was about 1:26. I don't think it's changed perceptibly for them. I haven't got that kind of
All righty.
Is that AM or PM?
Whatever you like.
Depends if it's summer or winter.
Don't worry about it, AM, yeah.
Okay, call two of everyone. Thank you so much. Yeah. Good and Shabbos. Psuris Davis.
About your